Moby Dick, Disc 6.
Chapter 36. The Quarter Deck. Enter Ahab, then all. It was not a great while after the affair of the pipe that one morning, shortly after breakfast, Ahab, as was his wont, ascended the cabin gangway to the deck. There, most sea captains usually walk at that hour, as country gentlemen, after the same meal, take a few turns in the garden. Soon his steady ivory stride was heard as to and fro he paced his old rounds upon planks so familiar to his tread that they were all over dented like geological stones with the peculiar mark of his walk. Did you fixedly gaze, too, upon that ribbed and dented brow? There also you would see still stranger footprints, the footprints of his one unsleeping, ever-pacing thought. But on the occasion in question, those dents looked deeper, even as his nervous step that morning left a deeper mark. And so full of his thought was Ahab that at every uniform turn that he made, now at the mainmast and now at the binnacle, you could almost see that thought turn in him as he turned, and pace in him as he paced, so completely possessing him, indeed, that it all but seemed the inward mould of every outer movement. "Do you mark him, Flask?" whispered Stubb. "The chick that's in him pecks the shell. 'Twill soon be out." The hours wore on. Ahab now shut up within his cabin, anon pacing the deck, with the same intense bigotry of purpose in his aspect. It drew near the close of day. Suddenly he came to a halt by the bulwarks, and inserting his bone leg in the auger hole there, and with one hand grasping a shroud, he ordered Starbuck to send everybody aft. "Sir," said the mate, astonished at an order seldom or never given on shipboard except in some extraordinary case. "Send everybody aft," repeated Ahab. "Mastheads there, come down." When the entire ship's company were assembled, and with curious and not wholly unapprehensive faces were eyeing him, for he looked not unlike the weather horizon when a storm is coming up, Ahab, after rapidly glancing over the bulwarks and then darting his eyes among the crew, started from his standpoint, and as though not a soul were nigh him, resumed his heavy turns upon the deck. With bent head and half-slouched hat, he continued to pace, unmindful of the wondering whispering among the men, till Stubb cautiously whispered to Flask that Ahab must have summoned them there for the purpose of witnessing a pedestrian feat. But this did not last long. Vehemently pausing, he cried, "What do you do when you see a whale, men?" "Sing out for him," was the impulsive rejoinder from a score of clubbed voices. "Good!" cried Ahab with a wild approval in his tones, observing the hearty animation into which his unexpected question had so magnetically thrown them. "And what do you do next, men? Lower away and after him! And what tune is it you pull to, men? A dead whale or a stove boat?" More and more strangely and fiercely glad and approving grew the countenance of the old man at every shout, while the mariners began to gaze curiously at each other as if marveling how it was that they themselves became so excited at such seemingly purposeless questions. But they were all eagerness again as Ahab, now half revolving in his pivot hole, with one hand reaching high up a shroud and tightly, almost convulsively grasping it, addressed them thus: "All ye mastheaders have before now heard me give orders about a white whale. Look here. You see this Spanish ounce of gold?" holding up a broad, bright coin to the sun. "It is a $16 piece, men. Do you see it? Mr. Starbuck, hand me yon topmaul." While the mate was getting the hammer, Ahab, without speaking, was slowly rubbing the gold piece against the skirts of his jacket, as if to heighten its luster, and without using any words, was meanwhile lowly humming to himself, producing a sound so strangely muffled and inarticulate that it seemed the mechanical humming of the wheels of his vitality in him. Receiving the topmaul from Starbuck, he advanced towards the mainmast with the hammer uplifted in one hand, exhibiting the gold with the other, and with a high raised voice exclaiming, "Whosoever of you raises me a white-headed whale with a wrinkled brow and a crooked jaw, whosoever of you raises me that white-headed whale with three holes punctured in his starboard fluke, look you, whosoever of you raises me that same white whale, he shall have this gold ounce, my boys." "Huzzah! Huzzah!" cried the seamen, as with swinging tarpaulins they hailed the act of nailing the gold to the mast. "It's a white whale, I say," resumed Ahab as he threw down the top maul. "A white whale. Skin your eyes for him, men. Look sharp for white water. If you see but a bubble, sing out." All this while, Tashtego, Dagoo, and Queequeg had looked on with even more intense interest and surprise than the rest, and at the mention of the wrinkled brow and crooked jaw, they had started, as if each was separately touched by some specific recollection.